All right, this is Pure Decking for Tuesday, October the 18th, 1985. Tonight we've got Assard, Nox, Analog, and Foxwolf. All right, I'm Morps, and this is the show about shit that interests me. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Yo.
Yo. So, anyways, just some quick notes. Since we just did a show Saturday, this show is probably going to be fairly short, just because I don't have a hell of a lot of content to work with. We used most of it already. And, you know, this is show 42, The Meaning of Life, the Universe, and Everything. And I realize I am behind on posting shows on the website. I will fix that, hopefully, by the end of the week. So, that's all I've really got station news-wise. Does anybody else have any station news? Of course not. Nobody else runs the damn station. So, just roll right into it here. Probably not even going to take a music break tonight because I didn't really pick any music out before the show. So, I know. I suck. Did I lose the call? I'm, like, not hearing anybody.
No. We're just silently agreeing with you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is the sound of no one disagreeing with you. Yeah.
Ooh, hiss.
All right. So, anyways, first up here is from Ars Technica. Yeah, Bitcoin. About that. The price of buying a single Bitcoin on the currency's most active exchange, Mt. Gox, has been dropping at a rate of about a dollar every week or so since the value of it peaked in June at 30. At time of its writing, it's currently sitting about $2.84, or 1 euro. It's 1.8 of a euro. What do they use for cents in a euro? Is it still cents? I'm sorry, I'm American.
Euro, not sure.
I'm American. Yeah. I don't know this.
they use ask tax. Nobody else of cares. Euros.
Yeah, it's 1.8 of a euro. I don't know what they use for change in a euro. So it's dropped about 90% since it peaked in June. And I know back in June when it hit $30, everybody was saying, "Oh, this is the darknet credit. This is going to be, the future of currency and all this other stuff." And I think on Pure Decking, I said I was worried about it being pump and dump.
Well, this is kind of a slow dump here, but...
Well, that's true.
it's nothing shocking at all.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you're going to do a currency system, it should stay around whatever the real value of it was. And when it hit that 30, I think it was just everybody was hearing about it, so it was kind of a fad.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of unfortunate. It would have been cool to had a real alternative currency, but... I'm not sure that it's going anywhere. I'm fairly certain it's not, actually, which is too bad. So, nobody else? Okay. This one is cool. I've got the link in the notes here, and when I post it on the site, go and look at this. This is awesome. It's from smh.com. Wait a minute. No, that's a different story. I have mixed up the notes. All right.
I think it's the one below it.
It's the link below it. I've got the description for the... I suck. But if you looked at the ones below it, they're the notes that go with the SMH story. Because SMH is an Australian
and
website.
The one above it goes down.
Yeah, they flip-flopped. I don't know how I did that. I Google Docs fail.
Fail, copy-paste. Thank you.
Copy-paste, fail. I need a fail sound. Let me see if I can find a fail sound.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Fail.
That's about it. Here we go. This will work. There we go. Because I have to play with the soundboard. So we'll
awesome. And nobody under 30 will ever recognize what that sound is.
Oh, come on. Everybody's got emulators, and you can find Pac-Man for free these days. Really?
Yeah. But I just spent a day with people who'd never heard of it, and I had to describe it.
Well,
they should be shy.
I've met people who didn't know who Data on Star Trek was. So, anyways. And Fox just won the podcast again.
He's the tall, hairy guy, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Fox, you have a talent for doing that. So, we'll do the...
No, he just has a trombone.
Yeah, he's got the sad trombone there. So, we'll
one
do...
time at band camp.
We'll do the SMH story here and just realize I've got the notes in the wrong place. So this story is actually horrifying. When Patrick Weber, it's the New Scientist one, it's the link you want to go look at. This story is just scary. When Patrick Weber first told First State Super, he had found a flaw exposing personal details of its 770,000 members, including NSW police officers, politicians, and magistrates, he thought he was doing a good deed. What the hell? Oh, eBay's messaging me on my phone. Basically, this guy was doing, he found a security flaw in their website that was exposing all his personal details, and he told them. The rest of the story here, before long, Weber, a private security consultant, received a knock on the door from police and a legal letter from the super annotation firm. I'm not sure if I'm saying that word right. Super annotation? I don't know. It's Australian. Threatening legal action. First State Super has disabled his account and asked to check his computer and said he may be liable for fixing costs of the breach. In other words, the dude found a security flaw on their website and told them about it, and now they're suing him and saying he's responsible for the flaw.
What?
Yeah.
No.
As somebody who does security research, yeah, no. Absolutely fucking not.
That's like, hey, bank, your vault door's open, and then they tackle you.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's not cool. It's clearly wrong to blame this guy. It's shooting messenger, quite literally. Although in their case, it's, you know, with the legal equivalent of a, you know, tank. So saying he's liable for fixing costs in the breach, that is insane to me. I mean, granted, it's Australia, and if we had RU here, he could explain to us in horrifying detail of why that's not surprising for Australia.
Well, okay, he's going to give us a story about he's driving his pickup along, and he comes across a pothole, and he has to get out and fill in, or he's going to be shot by snipers.
That could very well be the case. I don't know. Australia is a scary, horrifying place.
So I guess what I find interesting is the letter actually came from the company's, according to, I guess, both Investopedia.com and Webster.com, it's their retirement/pension program.
Well, I think that's probably what the website was for.
Huh, interesting.
So, I mean, he was in their website for their pension program. But yeah, they're basically blaming him for their security breach because he pointed it out. Now, here's the real fun question for you. So this guy finds this flaw, exposing all his personal details. How do you know he's the first one to find it? What makes you think somebody hasn't already found it, dumped out all the personal details, and is currently selling it on the Carter forums for identity theft purposes? This guy was just kind of nice enough to try to tell them about it to try to fix the problem. You think somebody else hasn't already found it?
But do you really believe that? He thought he was doing a good deed. Bullshit. He knew he freaking exposed their systems, and I'd be interested to see. And
no, I think
You think he actually legitimately went, "Hey guys, you got this flaw," even though I took, you know, Well, yeah, I guess it doesn't. Took the details, or he just said that there were some 770,000 members.
They just threw out however many members there were, and said he found a way. He basically found a privilege escalation, a way to dump out whatever he wanted from their website, right? So I assume if he went to them and said, "Hey, you guys, you got a problem here," then yeah. The other flip side of the coin is the other way that this happens is the hacker goes to them and says, "Hi, here's your data. What are you going to pay me to keep quiet about this?" Which, that does happen. Don't kid yourself. But
and that's somewhat less legal and sort of gives them this permission to shoot them.
But. Yeah, pretty much. But in this case, I'm not sure that's what's happened. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's not. But
talking to RU is, leave it up to Australia to fuck it up.
Hey, Sard, I think you got a loose wire on your microphone or something. We keep getting this weird-ass buzz off of you.
Did you actually read what First State Super said to the information they put on their site for their members about the fraud?
I did. Let me, it was this morning. see, scroll down in the story here. 30 seconds to write probably the opinion. I spent several hours putting together something to attack him. Blah 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 blah. Where was it in the article?
It's about middle way down, I believe. It says identity theft has been a significant issue for this industry. First State's own website has a warning. You can click on the word warning there. And details revealed on the statements were a fraudster's dream, including full names, addresses, email addresses, membership number, age, insurance information, the amount, and find all locations, beneficiaries, and employer information.
Yeah, that's enough for identity theft. Let's see what the warning here actually says. How can you help fight fraud? Check your First State account. They've just got a generic fraud page here.
Yeah. That's I guess the other side of this, too, is you even have access to beneficiaries. So not only are you exposing the 770,000 actual people who are a part of this, but all their beneficiaries as well, which could lead to even more identity theft.
Yeah, no, this is a huge problem. And like I said, the issue the only reason I'm wanting to talk about the story at all is because, websites have huge holes in them all the time. It's just this particular one is going, oh, the security researcher who found it? Yeah, he's responsible. Yeah, that's not cool. So
not cool one bit.
Anyways,
here is the name and number of my lawyer. You shall contact him from now on and leave me the hell alone.
Yeah, pretty much. But so anyways, let's go on to the other story, you know, since I've got both their notes messed up. And again, this is the one you want to go to their page. It's a new scientist, and it's Microsoft demos a new touch interface. OmniTouch combines a Pico projector with a Kinect-like depth-sensing camera to create a shoulder-mounted device that can project a multi-touch interface onto a wall, desk, or your hand. Users can define the size and location of their own interfaces or let the system decide the best choice. So basically, they're strapping a Kinect onto your shoulder and putting one of those little LCD Pico projectors next to it. And it's using the Kinect software to give you a touchable interface on anything you care to shine it on.
It looks a bit gimmicky and tacky to me. It's like, if you want to show your friends what you're doing on your smartphone and you happen next to be a white wall in a dark room, you can.
Yeah.
But think of the porn implications, man. Think of the porn.
That was my first thought, too, is, you know, you open up your phone, and I only mention this because I've seen people do it, which is hilarious, by the way. I was up at my office, and somebody opened up their laptop, and you just hear the screaming. And it's just like, really? Wow. And you see somebody leaving the building very quickly. You know, it's just hilarious. But yeah, it's a cool use of the Kinect technology. Now if you take this and instead of using the Pico projector, you use something like a heads-up display, you have the interface from Damon.
Yeah, that's why I figured Fox would have a major hard-on for this, because it's probably a step towards his personal computing that he wants so badly. It's kind of
cool.
Yeah,
for a heads-up display.
Oh, yeah.
For heads up display,
I actually did see that article earlier, but I was at work and they wanted me to do things, so I never got to read it.
Yeah,
it looked pretty awesome. I mean, watching the guy like do the little dial pad on his hand, I was like, okay, he's in a dark room though, so.
And imagine if he was a black guy.
Oh. Wow!
Hold on, I got it. Fuck, wrong one.
You know what happened when they brought the Kinect out, didn't you?
Crickets?
See black people. No, sorry, I was going for this one, hit the wrong button.
Oh, okay, that works. So now, what was this about the Kinect and black people? I must have missed this.
The Kinect cannot see black people unless they put on white face.
That is awesome.
I did not know this. I've never heard this.
There's also several webcams, like, you know, those ones that have the little motor in them that are supposed to like track your face so you can like move around and the webcam will follow you.
Yeah.
Also, did not work with black people.
Whoops.
Oh, that's awesome.
They did this review online And this guy's sitting there talking, and he walks out of the frame. This chick walks in, like, it immediately pans to her face and tracks her. She sits down, and she starts moving left and right, and he just kind of totally, he slides into the frame, and she slides out, and it follows her, and it stays looking to where she went, and he's, like, moving all over the screen.
He's, like, trying to get its attention, and it just doesn't pick him up.
Of course ninjas wear black. Well, we're seeing the evidence that it works here.
That's awesome.
That's I'm surprised there hasn't been a lawsuit over that. I'm sure it's just a stupid issue with the technology and nobody thought about it, but still.
Now, it was a day one problem.
Whoops.
It's a different graphic in their testing.
Whoops.
Well, of course they didn't have anybody to test it on. They were all working.
I'm going to get my ass kicked. Anyways,
they just weren't meant to use it.
Yeah, there you go. That's, wait a minute, that's not any better. Damn it! All right, moving swiftly along away from racism. Let's see. Yeah. Anyways, I'm only racist by association, I swear. Let's see. And, okay, this is the last story I got. Like I said, it's short show today because, Saturday sucked up everything. But, it's another Ars Technica article. This one's cool. The Federal Communications Commission, FCC, and major wireless carriers announced new guidelines for warning customers when they're at risk of incurring unexpected charges on their cell phone bills. They're calling it bill shock, and apparently they got a ton of complaints in 2010 for it. This is where, you know, you go on a vacation or something, and you forget to set your phone to only use voice, and you get the $5,000 cell phone bill for roaming charges. Let's see, what else did I have in here? The unexpected charges can crop up when a consumer exceeds their caps for voice data or texting, or wherever they incur high roaming charges. Earlier this year, wireless industry insisted consumers just need to do their homework to avoid such surprises, but the FCC used the threat of formal regulation to get them to change their tune. Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile have agreed to voluntarily adopt new rules in the next 12 to 18 months. Essentially, they're supposed to automatically warn customers, probably via text message, when they're getting close to getting a fee, such as a roaming. That's going to be bad?
Yeah. I've gotten text messages ads back when I had a track phone, a prepaid phone, and those cost an entire minute to check for each one, and they sent me like 3 a day.
Oh.
And I had 30 minutes on it all month.
If they come from, you know, the carrier, though, they're supposed to be free.
They weren't.
Mm.
Yeah, most of those don't come from the carrier. They are a third-party bullshit vendor. As someone who also used the track phone for a while, it's a pain in the ass. But like, oh, who's this number? And with everybody getting, like, their new smartphones, people's numbers were changing for a while. So I would check them. Text, you know, #8327 to get your free horoscope. It's like, how can I backtrack you and put a bullet in your face?
Yeah.
Let's see here. My grandpa has come up with the bill shock. He had a cell phone, and he had to go in town to check his messages, and in order to know if he had the messages, he actually had to call the message service that was supposedly free, but he ended up with a $300 bill his first month.
What are you trying to say, Sard?
I was just asking Fox if why he didn't want a bigger PN13IS.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I already got like so many of those in the mail. Like, I'm going to have to order, like, a wheelbarrow, I think. All this stuff that's coming in the mail. I recommended you as a friend to get, like, a 50% discount, so you should be getting some of those messages, too.
Yeah. Sarge, seriously, you need to check your microphone. We're getting buzz off you, like weird pink noise or something, I think is what that is. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's like a high-pitched beep and then a buzz. I thought it was his manual mute and unmute.
Well, that could be.
He said he stopped doing that, though.
Yeah, I did. Little... Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Weird.
Huh, weird.
All right, well, live technical support on Galaxy 15 Radio. So, anyways, we're not going to be playing...
There you go. Do an actual call for help.
Oh, God.
It used to, but actually keep doing it. and don't get bought out by a faggoty MTV wannabe computer network.
Well, okay, that we could do that, but half the time the answer would be, yeah, why don't you quit sucking at using computers?
Yeah. Fucking Google it, noob.
Yeah, that would pretty much it. Let me just Google this live for you right here on the air. I mean, that's what it would be.
Yeah.
I'd just say reformat every question. Just reformat.
Sing the Microsoft
song.
Have
you jiggled the cable?
Yeah. Try deleting System 32.
Yeah, no, it's the Microsoft song. It's let's see, F disk format reinstall, doo da. Let's see.
Oh, I remember Windows 95 and singing that song all day long. I've reformatted that thing twice a day.
F disk format reinstall all the goddamn day. Anyways, let's see here. It's time for, we're not doing musical break because it's going to be a short show, so. It's time for everyone's favorite segment. Somebody gives me karate noises.
Me love you long time.
Oh, me so horny.
And you were worried about it earlier, man.
That's true. That's true. Well, you know, Sarge sends you this great thing. Says use this for Digital Dojo. I'm like, that's the most racist thing I've heard. I have to use this now.
You're welcome.
So, anyways, let's see here. First thing we got up in Digital Dojo. Sard, this was mostly actually something I saw that I thought would be handy for you since you were asking me about getting started with Metasploit and stuff like that. This one is blackhataacademy.org. Daily lessons regarding secure programming, networking, administration, internet development, and generally what it means to be a hacker and surviving today's world. It's full of examples, tests, lessons, tutorials, all kinds of, capture the flag scenario, all kinds of great, crazy crap to do if you're trying to get started in network security.
That sounds freaking awesome.
Yes, it is. It is very cool. There's a few other sites out here like this, but this was one I liked, so I thought we'd point that one out. Yeah. Next up, Rapid7, I think it was actually this morning, released the Metasploit Community Edition. Now, 2 years ago, approximately, when Rapid7 first acquired Metasploit, they always said there was always going to be an open source version of it. But then they started building an interface on top of it, and they were selling that as Metasploit Pro. And the interface is cool, don't get me wrong. I've seen a lot of demos of it, and It's got a lot of things like I personally like the Armitage interface. Artemis is a
You'll
video
never
game.
Get that right.
You're quiet. You. It's the Armitage interface, which is one I like. I'm not sure how this compares to it, but they've essentially put out a lightweight version of their Metasploit Pro interface, put it on top of the open source framework, and they're calling that Metasploit Community Edition. So if you're scared of the console of the command line, then you shouldn't be using Metasploit. But if you're scared of the command line, you can at least get started with this Community Edition and have an interface on top of it to play with. It's in a nice friendly web browser, and it does some of the session sharing and managing your shells for you and stuff like that Artemage does. So why do I keep doing that? Keep wanting to say Artemis instead of Armitage.
Because you long for space flight simulation.
Well, yes, but that's not the point. Yeah. I think we've talked about space flight sim too. So, next one up. I can't speak properly either. Why am I on the radio show? Next one up, we've got NoScript is working on a version NoScript for Android and Memo phones, essentially, for the Firefox on those. What were they calling it? NoScript Lite? NoScript Portable? Oh, NoScript Anywhere. That's what it was. Okay. So, essentially, they're taking the NoScript add-on for Firefox, which is something you should be using, and porting it to the Android phone, which, on processor-limited phones, I think that's a good idea anyways.
That's exactly what I was going to agree. That sounds freaking awesome. I have a Gen 1 Android phone, and it the web browsing can be really slow, especially when you go to something with Flash.
Oh, hell, I can't hardly use my netbook on the internet with that NoScript running anymore. You hit one website that's got a couple of, you know, Flash ads or something on it, and the whole thing just grinds to a halt.
Oh, great. I started on that. Yay, dial-up 5 years after DSL was popular.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I had a friend of mine call me, and it was a friend of a friend had bought a netbook, but they only had dial-up internet, and they wanted to know how to get the thing on the internet. And I said, get not crappy internet. So, you know, it's like, go buy a USB modem, but I mean, for a netbook? Anyways, I digress.
Okay, I have here a pocket PC. You want to take a crack at that?
It's possible. It's a pain in the ass, but it is possible. It involves having a host PC and ad hoc networking.
Yeah, it sort of doesn't have any interface I can use to connect it to anything. I cannot even put in drivers for a USB stick, which is the only thing I can use.
Are you sure that's actually a pocket PC and not a paperweight?
I think it's both.
I was going to say, where was the right there? That was good.
Well, no, he's just saying that he has a Macintosh.
Oh, okay. That's
cool.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think it's Windows ME.
No, that would be a laptop. Although Microsoft doesn't technically acknowledge the existence of Windows ME. I know it existed.
Let's Do you see. Blame them?
No, not really.
Actually, it's probably one of the smartest things Microsoft ever did.
just like, yeah, that didn't exist. That didn't happen. We didn't do that. We don't know what you're talking about. All right, this next one up in Digital Dojo, this is cool. This is not anything new. I saw this a long time ago, but they've updated it, and they've got some really, really good stuff. This is at wiki.daviddarts.com/piratebox_DIY. What this is instructions for building small portable servers focused towards data distribution, specifically setting up wireless access points with a file server of some sort attached to it that you can carry around in a lunchbox. And this thing has instructions and links to software for doing that. And they've got, you know, the initial write-up was on doing it with a WRT54G or any router running the OpenWRT and like a flash drive, right? And they've got instructions on doing it with mobile phones, with old laptops, with the plug computers. And if you can do it on a phone, of course, you can do it on a tablet. But the concept is that way you can, you know, share your music, movies, whatever, without having to worry about getting, you know, DMCA complaint notices, because it's on a private network. It's on a private Wi-Fi. Nobody's got access to it unless they're local to it, right? So you could go, you know, someplace, you know, public, university, coffee shop, whatever, you set out your lunchbox and this wireless access point just shows up on the network and it's, you know, open at offering shares. Personally, this also looks like a great way to spread malware, but that's, you know, neither here nor there.
No one would do that.
No.
No.
But this is an awesome concept, and this can be expanded upon. Instead of just being a file server, why not, you know, music server, chat server, you know, Mumble, voice server of some sort, you know, whatever. I can see doing a lot of things with this.
Yeah, that's sweet, dude. The first thing I thought of when I saw that was, I can't remember what city it was. It was like Boston or New York or something, but they were putting the thumb drives within walls. You would just like walk up to a wall.
Yeah, it had the USB port sticking out.
That's exactly what it reminded me of, which is another awesome thing that I'll have to go check up on that project, see how that's doing.
Yeah, again, great way to spread malware.
yeah, I just like the whole, I don't know, like, I'm a pirate, so like the whole free love, free information, everybody share.
Well, we'll close out with Patient Zero's A Pirate Is, since I didn't put any thought into that. And that's easy and fits what we're talking about, so let's see, while I'm looking for that. Next one up, last thing in Digital Dojo. This is just a quick article. It's on Customzania. I guess I'm saying that right. It's a nice write-up on how to make the latest of Ubuntu, the one with the Unity interface, look like the classic Ubuntu and be usable. It goes through turning off all the Unity stuff, getting a classic interface back, turning on Compiz, you know, adding a dock, that kind of stuff, so that you actually get a real interface you can use again, because I know there's a lot of people who like Unity on the Ubuntu interfaces, or at least they can, you know, put up with it. I really can't stand it. Admittedly, I spend 90% of my time on the command line anyways, but it just gets in my way.
Yeah, and I'm with you, dude.
The interface should not get in your way.
Yep.
So I cannot find a pirate is. So somebody else talk for a few seconds while I'm scrolling here trying to find this stupid thing. Ah, there it is.
Yeah, really. The interface should help you find your way. Otherwise, you just use the command lines. And, well, that's what I've been doing in Second Life ever since I've had to switch to Viewer 2. And,
fair enough.
Yeah, command lines in Second Life. Who knew? I knew.
Let's see. What is this? Analog sent me something here. M-Audio Pro Tools recording. So what's this?
Nothing for the show, really.
Oh,
just,
okay.
It's just an interface audio recorder.
Oh, okay, so. Cool. You know, just something you want to be... Okay, yeah. Cool. So moving right along here. Man, it's only half an hour in, we're already on topics. Yeah, I knew it was going to be short, but crap. Let's see here. So I don't have much on topics tonight. So I thought we'd talk about some computer repairs I've done. And we just tonight, actually, screwed one of them up. But anyway, so this one's kind of fun. I have this 486 laptop, ancient thing. It's an Epson laptop. So it kind of gives you an idea of how old they are, how old it is. But several years ago, the battery in it was completely shot, worthless, right? And I modified it so it would run on double A's. Nickel cadmium rechargeable double A's. Now, this worked because when I pulled the old battery apart, I noticed that the cell size had the same voltage as rechargeable double A's. They were larger, so they had more milliamps. They held a charge longer. But yeah, so I just soldered a bunch of batteries in place, which wasn't exactly the smartest thing to do. But, you know, here recently, the battery pack I put together for it died again, which is not terribly surprising because I don't use it that often. I mean, it is a 486. But I took it as a challenge to get it going again. So I went down and I got a couple of battery holders so I wouldn't have to solder directly to batteries this time. And finding nickel-cadmium rechargeable batteries these days that aren't, you know, shot is interesting. I had to go to a specialty shop. And, yeah, so I've got a laptop running on double A's, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, I think I agree. That's pretty cool, actually. I've seen other tutorials, but I didn't know anyone that had actually done it.
Well,
you know, I do have something that can do that, but it's the size of a car battery, and you plug into it.
Oh, okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about, those things. No. This is in the original battery slot. Now I don't get nearly as much battery life out of it as I would have with the original battery, just because it doesn't have nearly as many milliamps per cell. But the cells have the same voltage.
But you get more than the actual original battery.
Oh yeah, it'll actually stay on for about an hour now, give or take. Versus the old one, which got about 5 minutes.
Mine goes for about 50 seconds. Yeah. So.
You know, getting the right voltage out of it and able to rework the cell is what made it work. You can do this without, you know, I thought it was funny just because double A's happen to work. But if you pull apart old laptop batteries and you do it without, you know, spraying acid everywhere, you know, the manufacturer warnings you're going to start fires and kill babies if you, you know, tear apart their batteries. But,
they're just going to explode and take out the entire orphanage.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay. Yeah, actually, inside of these things is usually a stack of battery cells that they've just kind of stacked in there to whatever shape. And
yeah, I've opened up some of those cells for other things and found out that they were name brand label actual AA batteries.
Yeah, and a lot of times they're just wrapped in a heat shrink or a plastic, and you can swap out the cells and replace your batteries for much, much cheaper than...
Actually, at one point... I wanted to buy more rechargeable batteries, and I ended up getting a bunch of cells for my remote control car and
just tearing it apart. Nice. Well, I mean, if it's cheaper. So.
Oh, it was.
Now, on the topic of replacing batteries, I was also working on this older laptop. It's an old Gateway, one of those convertible tablets, back when they were still using the Finepoint digitizers, not the Wacom digitizers, which means it had an active digitizer. So the digitizer had a battery in it, essentially, is what it comes down to. And I was trying to use it the other day, and it was pretty wonky, and Analog actually got to play with it a little bit, and he immediately just kind of threw the stylus away. And it's like, yeah, no. And so I did a little bit of research and figured, well, okay, yeah, the shelf life on this battery, on the battery in the stylus is supposed to be about 5 years. Well, I've had the Gateway laptop for about 7, so that's doing pretty good that it was still working at all. So I did a little bit of research and found out, okay, yeah, these things take a quad A battery, and you can just swap them out. So following the instructions I found for the thing online, I pop the end of it off, and I start to disassemble it. Well, some genius at Gateway soldered the spring that's buried in the pin to the end of the battery. And it's already in there snug, so you can't really tell how much force you should need to get it out. But, so I pulled on it a little bit, and the spring just snapped. It was all corroded, covered in acid. The battery had been leaking. And, of course, I can't get the spring fixed unless I can get the pin completely apart, and they glued the plastic onto the metal very well, and there's circuitry in there, so I can't just go squeezing and yanking on it. So I pretty much get to buy a new stylus now, because I've ruined this one.
You even going to be able to find one? I guess eBay is your friend there.
eBay was my friend. I found one. It cost me about $20, but it's coming out of Taiwan, so it's probably going to take a month to get here.
Right, right.
So... But, you know, I've got a replacement stylus on the way. But so, yeah, just, you know, if you're going to follow instructions you find online, be aware they may not be accurate. There might be, you know, a solder dab on the end of the spring that's going to ruin it and make it so that the only way to fix it would be to take a Dremel to the damn thing, which I may try anyways, but that's neither here nor there. So.
Yeah, I might as well try it at least because now you have a spare.
When in doubt, add power tools.
I like it. I mean, you would think.
Just make sure that I'm there with a camera, because I mean, you know, that would make for great, you know, TV. But
watching me injure myself yet again with power tools.
Yes.
Oh, geez, it'd only be the 8th time I've been seriously electrocuted. So.
Yes, but we haven't captured this on video yet.
Well, last time you tried, the camera went out, but that's.
Fixer, it didn't happen.
Yeah, pretty much. So, anyways, like I said, short show tonight. Oh, that's pretty much all I got. Unless somebody else has a topic they're wanting to bring up, burning to talk about.
I was just gonna mention. Started playing with Metasploit. Thanks to Morps, he showed me some cool stuff, and I have the fear now. you can do some crazy ass shit with that program, and rainbow tables are crazy also.
Oh, yeah, did you finally get around to taking care of those hashes you pulled out of your test box?
Yeah, exactly. And like, what I thought was a good password, yeah, it took about 47 seconds to crack.
Isn't that great, the way that happens?
Talk about giving you the fear, like, Jesus Christ.
It's not the fear, it's knowledge. And now that you know what is possible. See, now the real trick is... Now that you have this attack tool and you know what it works on, try it on systems you use every day. Try the same tactics on stuff that you actually rely on and see if it works. If it does, you have a problem. Because guess what? If you can pull this shit down on the internet and figure it out with a couple hours of YouTube videos and Google searching, so can anybody else.
Exactly. Good point.
So, yeah, we're going
to
be...
It's how I learned to dine in a 5-star restaurant.
Yep, that works. Wait a minute. Anyways, so just to wrap up here, of course, always check out RU's Open Mic Friday nights, which is probably not actually on Friday. I have nothing on every Saturday, if we ever find the major. Hugo's Newsreel on Thursdays, which has been strangely reliable. The Galaxy 15 radio site and Twitter handles, and anything else you guys wish to pimp.
Well,
I want to pimp those crickets. Those are some pimpin' ass crickets.
Steal stuff that we can't pay for, which be everything.